Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. Just a word before we get started, this is a special two-part episode from our first ever three-peat guest. Yes, Jason Ault returns to Commandarin to talk about Eternal Masters. We hope you enjoy the show.
Yeah, we could just have a chat. People like it when we just talk bollocks, which is good because that's mostly what we do.
Yeah, quality bollocks.
Quality bollocks, Governor. Fresh from the Natter's yard.
From the what?
The Knacker's yard.
Knacker. Okay, I need to look that up.
Knacker spelled with a K, like knickers.
It's an old horse processing.
Yeah, mostly horses. So if you had a horse and it, wasn't worthy of life anymore, you'd take it to the Knacker's yard and have it knackered.
Ah, I see.
Turned into glue.
Okay. Right.
Hence why you'd get old bollocks from there, you see. Right.
Oh. I just drop everything. I can't hear anything. I can hear out of one ear. I can hear out of two ears. Anything funny happening?
Bollocks.
We're discussing bollocks and knackers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we have to bleep any of that.
No, it's all very English.
That's crazy. No bleeping.
Yeah, me and Nate can always record stuff without you, Phil.
Yeah, I know.
Me and Wiz Fizzit, we're going to record our special podcast about Tim Tams.
Oh, very
which
good.
Which is a type of chocolate, Australian chocolate bar. Which I have a penchant for and you can't get them in England.
Oh, is he going to send them?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't asked him yet. I have had them many times. But yeah, we reckon we can do a whole series of podcasts just about Tim Tams.
Speaking of podcasts we could do, let's do this one.
Let's do Commandarin.
I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I'm Sean Watson.
And we are Commandarin.
Yep.
There's some music for you. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics, religion, politics, or Hearthstone. Remember to head over to join our Patreon community at patreon.com/commanderandmtg. By donating as little as a buck a show, you'll get to be part of events like determining which card should be on our most busted bracket, or feeding us questions for our guests a little bit early. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to talk about Eternal Masters. This is our Eternal Masters show. Are you guys excited? It's finally here.
Yay.
It's like it's already been here for a long time.
It's, yes, spoilers have been with us for a week, but of course, Sean, you're referencing some 20 years of Magic Vanilla.
Yep.
All right, but first, we have some news. Sean was on Commander's Brew. Hey, how about that?
I was on Commander's Brew. I was a replacement Josh Lee Kwai, because he couldn't make it, so I got...
Oh, snap.
Sean Tabarez contacted me across the Sean network, and beep 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 got me on.
Wow.
Was that like you were quietly sitting at home and all of a sudden there was a...
Oh, was that Sean?
The Sean phone is ringing. Quick, to the Sean phone.
We each have a bust of Sean Penn and you have to flip back the head and press a button and a special door appears. And we jump on the pole, slide down it, and then we find ourselves sitting in a recording booth. Andy is our Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tell you now, he looks good in green spandex pants.
I was going to ask.
Real good. Yeah. Oh. But no, seriously, I was on the brew. We were talking about Ailey, Eternal Pilgrim, I resisted the urge to talk because they're so nice. They let me basically choose what commander to talk about, and I resisted the urge to go full Dimir and just went Orzhov. And yeah, it was great fun, and they gave me a chance to air my racist opinions about green.
Those aren't racist. They're colorist.
Well, you know, I hate beasts.
Chromacist.
And elves.
There you go, chromacist.
Chromacist. Oh, God, Nate.
Chromacist.
Chromophobe.
Yeah.
And, yeah, those guys are wonderful. Our listeners, if you don't already listen to Commander's Brew, please, please go listen to Commander's Brew.
Yeah, they are fantastic guys.
It's a wonderful podcast. But also listen to episode 43 and 45. And one day when they get Nate on there, episode XX. And you can get an extra slice of Commander in as well.
Ouch.
They told me they feared Nate.
Why?
That Nate is too demonic. He's too powerful, too demonic, that when he talks about magic, the energies that flow through the microphone could destroy their sensitive recording equipment.
In the episode, Phil, you were referred to as Batman and me as the Joker. And there was a small debate over which DC villain Nate would be, to which I think Sean and Andy postulated the Riddler, to which I said, no, he's more like Darkseid. You know, we're all just playing kiddie-level villainry. Then Nate comes in and this bleep just got real. And we need like a Superman-level hero to go and take Nate out so we can continue, you know, smashing up Gotham.
How did that not make it to air?
It did, very briefly, though. This was only a quick conversation.
Oh.
Phil must have turned off before the end. It was.
I fell asleep a couple of times. You know, it's that British voice. It lulls me to sleep. It's like every episode we record, I have to be, you know, prodded awake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Sean, you were a replacement guest for Josh Lee Kwai?
I was. I mean, they gave me, obviously, because of the nature of their show, they have to brew a deck, and we had a conversation. So, I had, like, a week ahead. It wasn't just, like, a last-minute thing.
Right. Because, like, now it feels like you're kind of a replacement guest for Jason Ault.
Well, like Jason Ault, I have received a lot of hate off the internet this week for my staggeringly biased opinions on green. But opinions are opinions, people. You don't have to agree with me, and I'm not telling you how to play your games. Calm down. Calm down. P.S. Hashtag easy mode green. Anyway.
So are you looking forward to the four-color commander set without green?
The Shauntopia quadrant? Yes, yes, I really am. It's going to be wonderful. Right. Well, we discuss those commanders, I'm staking a claim to whatever that commander is immediately, right now. Way before we see any spoilers, that's my card.
All right.
Oh, it is going to be so lame.
What, because it doesn't have green?
Yeah.
It's going to be...
It'll be the weakest of them.
I'll take the one without white.
Mm. Ooh, Phil, what are you staking a claim to?
I'll take the one without blue.
Oh, snap.
Ooh, bold choice, sir. Bold choice. What do the Nephilim do of our respective colours? That might give us an idea of what they're going to do. Or should we save this conversation?
We should save it because we actually have an entire episode dedicated to both speculation and then when the set comes out, the set itself!
Da-da-da-da-da!
You always remind me of Strong Bad when you do that.
I used to watch Homestar Runner quite a lot. Happened to that show?
They're still making it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so. At least they were when I checked, and it was about a year ago that I checked.
God, I presume it's just Strong Bad emails and nothing else now.
It should be.
A friend of mine was really into it, and I did buy him a copy of Deep Impact on DVD for Christmas every year. For about 3 years in a row, which if you don't watch that show, you won't find very amusing. But if you do, it's a subtle in-joke. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Holy the Shauntopia quadrant Nephilim's excellent.
Your Tiller?
Yeah, it's like...
Oh, yeah.
Carlier of the Graveyard. Anyway, we'll talk about him another time.
Right.
It's the best one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Ink Treader might be... If you build around Ink Treader. Mm. But Doom Brood's fun.
I got given a free Doom Brood. It was cool.
Well, Sean, that was an excellent appearance on Commander's Brew.
Yeah.
The interview was hilarious. Really laughed at that. Your Erebos now, like forevermore, when I hear you speak, it's like, oh my god, I'm talking to the god of the dead.
Yep, no life gain for you, sir. No life gain for you.
Well, it is just like playing you anyway.
Yeah, because your life disappears. Da, 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 da.
It's actually Nate who prevents the life gain most of the time.
Okay, so any other news?
So, yeah, we have another one. There was a disqualification at GP Manchester. You were there, I'm aware.
Mm.
What was it like on GP Manchester weekend, which would be 2 weekends ago?
I only went to day one because I had to work the next day. And
I thought you were LARPing, actually.
No, that was the week before.
Yeah, no, GP Manchester and LARPing were the same weekend.
Couldn't have been. I must have LARPing up on the wrong weekend.
Oh. Were you alone in the woods?
No. I must have told you the wrong weekend for LARPing. The English GPs are much smaller than American GPs, judging by the video footage you sent me of GP LA, which appeared to be in some sort of aircraft hangar.
It was.
Pretty much.
Yeah, they're normally in sort of sports halls in the UK. I was unaware of this disqualification until you brought it to my attention, Phil. So I don't really pay much attention to the pro scene, but that's an irrelevant comment now. So carry on, Phil.
Yep, and we're of course talking about Fabrizio and Terry's disqualification. There was even a Wizards announcement, but the short of it is he was engaged in what's called mana weaving, where you go through your deck and you find clumps of mana and you separate them, and then not shuffling. And he was discovered in the finals. A judge noticed it. The judge who observes the finals noticed it, called him out on it, and they determined that it was done deliberately, and he was disqualified. And he had several, he posted publicly an apology and his reasons for doing so, and it's basically that he, you know, make sure that there are no clumps. And then he just forgot to shuffle, and he doesn't know if that happens 0.1% or 1%, maybe 10% of the time, as he put it. And after it was pointed out, as in his own words, he said, today, after a judge noticed this and I was called for investigation and got everything explained, he understands the unfair advantage he was getting from doing this.
He knew already, God's sake.
Well, you know, as a pro player, you have a lot on your mind. And I'm sure that, you know, he was so focused on making sure his deck was going to provide him every advantage he could that he didn't realize or forgot that mana weaving is actually cheating.
I'll give you a pro tip, listeners. So to mana weave, how you do it, but how you screw over someone you suspect is doing it. So you separate all your land and all your spells into two separate piles, then stick them into one pile without shuffling. Then pile shuffle into five piles, and then without shuffling, pile shuffle a second time into five piles. And that will weave it so you have one or two mana every two or three cards throughout your whole deck. If you see someone doing that, the often clue is they'll offer you to cut the deck, because if you cut the deck at any point without actually shuffling it, just do a cut, it will still leave the mana weaved. Simply take their deck and pile shuffle it twice again in reverse, and it will put all their spells in one half of the deck and all their land in the other. That's how you undo a double nickel mana weave, which is, I presume, what he was doing.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, Sean. No, I don't think his opponent even had an opportunity to comment on it. I think the judge snared him. I have yet to look at the exact video, but I'm just basing this off of his own public reaction to it. Response was pretty weird because a lot of pros were like, I don't think he would put his living into jeopardy like that. And I'm like, but how long do you have to play Magic, and to what level of pro do you have to get before you realize that This gives you a competitive advantage and allows you to more consistently beat your opponents, right? And the real shame about this is the guy was doing pretty well, and he had a decent pro record. And now you have to look at his entire record, and it includes some first place finishes and a lot of top eights. You have to include that and say, you know, you have to wonder what his record is based on. Is it a valid record? How many times did he cheat his way into that?
Comments like, a pro wouldn't put their career at jeopardy. Look at people like, what was he called? Alex Bertoncini, is it?
Oh, yeah. The other guy caught cheating a year ago.
Yeah. He's a pro player and got caught cheating multiple times. And never got life bans. And then was posting pictures of him holding giant checks with power nines in sleeves hanging out of his mouth whilst clutching a trophy after barefaced cheating and being caught for it. And of course pros are going to put that. In fact, being a pro makes it more likely you're going to cheat because there's serious cash online.
Yeah, I think the temptation is there, certainly. I don't know if it makes you more likely to cheat, but certainly those who are tempted to will tend to.
Gives you more of a reason to cheat. Now, I disagree. And in fact, there's some very good YouTube videos about how to spot people cheating and how to counteract it. I think a simple ability to be able to ask a judge. So you're not, once you've offered your deck to your opponent to shuffle at a tournament and they hand it back to you, you're not allowed to touch it again, are you? Is that correct? You're not allowed to shuffle your deck again. So I shuffle my deck. I hand it to you, my opponent, Phil. You shuffle it and hand it back to me. I'm not allowed to then shuffle it again, am I? But if you've, purposely trick shuffled to put a land on top of my deck, and I suspect that, I think I should be able to ask a judge to come and reshuffle my deck as an independent person at the table.
You absolutely are allowed to ask a judge to shuffle your deck. At any point, you can ask a judge to shuffle your deck, your opponent's deck, it doesn't matter.
I think if you're playing for big bucks up a top pro table, you should probably use that option.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, to interrupt our news, we've been joined by someone very special, an expert in this particular topic, which of course is Eternal Masters, and now we'll say its impact on the finance community. We're joined by Jason Ault.
I agree with half of that. I wouldn't necessarily call myself an expert on Eternal Masters. Because there's a lot in this set I'm like, okay, that's a weird choice, but there's a lot of it I'm happy with, so I can definitely speak to the financial impact of this set, but not necessarily the, hey, let's make a viable limited format for this set. Because I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Let's put Animate Dead World Gorger Dragon in limited. That'll be fun.
Well, it's sort of like a Petri dish, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose. There's good reanimator stuff and there's good sneak attack stuff in this set, but honestly, from a financial perspective, it's more interesting to talk about the stuff that's glaringly omitted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damnation. Sorry, got cough.
Right? But I don't know. Damnation could be in Conspiracy and that could be the card that makes that set sell.
Yeah, maybe.
Because honestly, I was so happy with the last Conspiracy. Like, as EDH and Cube players, Conspiracy was everything we all wanted. It gave us a bunch of cool new legends. It reprinted some legends and made them a little bit affordable. It gave us some stuff that is unique to draft, so it's fun in cube. Gave us some cool foils. So honestly, I won't say I'm more excited about Conspiracy 2.0 than I am about Eternal Masters, but I will say that Damnation easily slots into Conspiracy, so let's not give up hope.
I will go on the record saying I am very much more excited about Conspiracy 2 than I am Eternal Masters.
I mean, that's legit. There's some EDH stuff in here that's fine, but it mostly took $3 rares and made them bulk, and like that's all for EDH. Like, hey, maybe, you know, Sensei Divining Top will still be $100 or whatever, but you could maybe open one in a booster pack, so maybe it'll only be $12.
Yeah. Hi, Jason, by the way.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on, and I'm sorry you had to endure the lovely improving of your experience, which is Windows 10 installing itself.
Yeah, it did that. It did that without my consent. There's a word for that, but
no means no, Bill Gates. No means no.
Yeah, that whole thing is crazy. enough Windows 10. This is not the Windows 10 podcast.
I think we should not talk about LARPing, just for time purposes, by the way. We could talk about it another week.
I'll save that for the encyclopedia. Yeah.
Oh, no, I want to be there.
You can be on the encyclopedia.
Well, then I guess we'll have to record the encyclopedia on Tuesday.
That's fine.
As well as a full episode.
Yeah, they're easy to record. Anyway, Jason's seeing way too much behind the curtain here.
Oh, it's,
I don't know if you guys know this, but I have experience with podcasting. So.
Oh, do you? I was unaware of that.
I'm on a cast called Money Draft.
Are you?
that's the one I'm proud of. We had John Finkel on Money Draft. Has John Finkel ever been on Brainstorm Brewery? I don't think so.
That's funny. Yeah, your Brainstorm Brewery is I was listening to one. Oh, they call them, what is it? They call them bridge builders.
I
forget the name of the exact title. And you're starting off with that was very funny. You were like, "Yeah, I'm right here."
I like Brainstorm Brewery because I like the dirty words. But
well, that's a good opportunity to plug our Patreon, isn't it? Because if we get enough donations, we will do an After Dark episode where we don't bleep the show.
What?
We don't. And we talk about topics we would ordinarily avoid, such as bleep. Bleep and bleep.
Is one of those bleeps Hearthstone? Because I don't think anybody wants to hear that.
I would agree.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about Hearthstone.
No, nor am I. But Nate can have fun bleeping out words like and God, which he always bleeps when I say it.
No,
as a prefix, we have to, once it's
just
a prefix.
Just bleep out the O to make the Jewish listeners happy.
Yep. No, but it is true. We bleep out God when it's part of.
I would think damn it is the offensive part of, but.
Apparently not.
Apparently not.
Because what you don't know, Jason, is Commanderin really heavily appeals to the fundamentalist Christian sort of player of Magic the Gathering. They love us.
I would think so. Those people really love 75%.
Oh,
yeah, they
don't
do.
They? Yeah.
It's a wholesome family show. And so of course we are proponents of values.
Oh, that reminds me, while we're talking 75%. Jason, can you just say into the mic for me the phrase directly off, quite angrily, so I can have it as a ringtone?
Oh, yeah. For sure. directly off.
I'm sound clipping that for my text alert, I think.
Oh, absolutely. We'll isolate that for your MP4.
Yeah, I'll get it for
that's
you.
That's all
your ringtone. Yeah, that was funny. That was really our last, well, Sean's last real interaction with you, when you and I think justifiably so, I watched the car wreck as it was happening, right? And you didn't realize that Sean was pulling your leg.
Nope.
And no, because you get so much abuse about the 75% ethos.
Yeah, I would say about 75% of the community does not really get on board, which is fine. Yeah. Like, you would think that I went to people's LGS and twisted their arm behind their back and told them how to build that way. It's do whatever you want, man. Do what you want.
You did go around taking everybody's demonic tutors, right?
You bastard.
I personally confiscated everyone's demonic. Look, play demonic tutor if you want to play boring magic and always get the same card. Go,
hey,
more power to you. Go play a boring deck. I got two copies of my win condition now. Oh, I'm having so much fun.
Two?
Look at me. I draw
wrong.
My whole deck and win with Laboratory Maniac every game. Oh, I'm so good at magic. I'm such an original deck builder. Look at me. Yeah, okay, fine. Do whatever you want. I don't care. If
Jason,
you want to be that guy that wins the game that way and then everyone else at the table goes, okay, you won. We're going to finish up and see who gets second place. And you go,
Jason, you are describing every game with Sean.
Yeah, well.
That's not true at all. I wish I won every game.
He aspires to win every game in a boring manner, and that's. Did you go to GP Manchester, by the way?
I went to a bit of it, but yeah, I heard about. We were just discussing the controversy as you came on, actually.
I went to GP Manchester in 1998.
Oh, right. Whoa. What did you think of the disgusting hole of a city I live in?
Actually, I lived in Altrincham, so Manchester was like an upgrade.
I remember you telling me this before. Yeah, yeah. If you lived in Altrincham, Manchester's like...
I rode the tram for 20 minutes to aspire to go to your hole of a city. I'm like, this is much better than the smaller hole of a city that I live in.
My paper meta plays in Altrincham, so I play a lot of magic in Altrincham. So.
Oh, where at?
Oh, just at my friend's front room, but he happens to live there.
Because there was no shop there. Like, there was literally like a toy store that sold boosters.
Oh, did you go over to Fanboy 3 or Traveling Man or where did you?
Those were not things.
Yeah, all right, okay.
This was almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, that was before the bomb went off in Manchester. So, right,
no,
just
I lived there after the bomb. The bomb was like 98 or 97, I think. Yeah.
Just to let you know how rough Manchester is, this is genuinely not true. Genuinely completely true, the opposite of not true. The IRA planted a bomb in Manchester city centre, set it off, they called the head, so they evacuated the city centre, but then they set it off remotely. It destroyed half of the city centre, just wrecked it. And everyone is actually quite thankful for that bomb, because now we have quite a nice shopping district.
Yeah, the Marks and Spencer got a new storefront, so that was nice.
Yeah, I believe the phrase is, you know, no one got hurt, and we got a new shopping mall, so go the IRA.
Well, that new shopping mall befits the hoi polloi, which is the Manchester's city populace.
Yep. Anyway, I'm reticent that I have to go look after my son, so we should probably start checking. Sorry for trolling you on Twitter, Jason. Just remember, everything I say, well, 90% of what I say is meant with a leg-pulling aesthetic to it.
Yeah, that was like pulling the pin on the hand grenade.
You don't think that was a friendly, playful directly off?
I suppose so.
That's how I talk to my wife and daughter, so.
I, too, have experienced Twitter abuse this week. I won't go into it in depth, but I genuinely, at one point, was having a conversation with someone. I thought, they're not listening. They're in circular arguments with themselves. I thought, is this how Jason lives his life?
Oh, yeah. Imagine being me and having as many followers as I've got and having as many of them be human garbage.
How dare you? What I learned this week was, how dare you express an opinion that people can choose not to listen to if they don't want to, on a public medium that they can choose not to download if they don't want to.
Well, you insulted Green.
That's easy to do.
Oh, why would you do that?
Oh, I'm not going into this rabbit hole of a conversation now.
Green's a sacred cow.
Yeah, that's why I took it down. Sacred. I'm an apostate and an irreverent one at that. So, yeah.
The only thing worse than a black player is a red player. But nobody is going to publicly come out as a red player.
Oh, I'm...
Hey, guys, I think Gildo Bandit Warlord's got a good chance at getting third place in a four-player game. It's really good. I go search for Tenza Godo's Maul and attack for 7 before I'm destroyed completely. Don't worry, guys, we got Gamble in Eternal Masters, so I don't have to pay real money for Gamble.
Look...
I think every time I've seen Gamble played, it's misfired.
Right. Yeah. Search your library for a card and throw in your graveyard. F*** off and play red, you idiot. Why did you just play Vampiric Tutor? What's wrong with you? Why did you give your deck a chance to poop on you? That's what is going to happen.
If you're a Rakdos player and you're playing Gamble...
Like you playing Gamble, you have access to real tutors.
Access to the finest tutors ever printed. Multiples of them.
But you play Goblin Tutor, because you like to live dangerously. Have fun throwing your win condition in the graveyard, you idiot. That's why they printed Goblin Dark Dwellers or whatever, so you could get your win condition back after you threw it in your graveyard with Goblin Game.
Or you could recast your Gamble.
I've got 11 cards in hand. There's a 1 in 12 chance of shuffling away my Insurrection. Nope, there it is. Great. Magic's fun. Play a real color also. I kind of like mono red. I honestly like to cast their spells and do weird stuff like that, but I only have one mono red deck and it's just painful to play. I don't know why I do it to myself.
This is good. Right, so if you guys want to discuss things after we've done a turn of masters and I have off, you're more than welcome and I won't be offended, but in the aspects of time, can I suggest we move on to our main topic?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we did that on Brainstorm Brewery this week. Corbin had to leave early and Marcel showed up late, so we just sort of stitched. We didn't even mention it. We're sort of like, hey, there's only three people on at a time and like you're gonna hear different voices and you're just gonna have to be okay with that. So I'm sorry I'm late, guys, but if we can just sort of pretend that I didn't show up late and Sean didn't leave early, we'll see if anyone notices.
Well, as long as you start talking in a pretentious British accent, no one will notice.
Pretentious? You,
sir? I think that's a little bit redundant. It's hard to not have a pretentious British accent. There is a reason exactly. British people are the villains in all of our movies.
That's because we're absolute
right? That's why Simon Cowell and Gordon Ramsay have careers. It's like, look, Paula Abdul is not going to tell this kid he doesn't have a shot in hell of being a singer. She's way too nice. Get a mean British person. We can pretend it's because of the Boston Tea Party, and that's why he's being mean.
Yeah.
So both Sean and I were on Commander's Brew. I followed you. Jason, actually, and then Sean just did the last one that came up. We both thought we were being invited to Brainstorm Brewery, though. I'm stealing your joke.
If it were up to me, maybe you guys would have a shot.
Oh, I wouldn't. On Brainstorm Brewery, other than contributing English idiomatic swears, I wouldn't be able to contribute a lot to finance.
Yeah, we'd be like, we buy cards.
I buy them.
I pay retail on cards. Is that, am I doing it right?
I bought four copies of one card once. Are you guys impressed? It was Emiria Shepherd.
And just like Jason said, I buy two of everything that I buy. Buy two.
Bollocks.
If I'd have taken my own advice, I would have bought 50 copies of Sword of Blade of Selves when they were $1. But I don't take my own advice anymore. I always feel bad telling people to buy a card, and then I'm like, hey, why don't you pay really high because I bought every loose copy on TCG Player between writing the article and it getting published. So I always feel bad buying my own specs, like, so I don't do it anymore.
Oops.
Yeah. So if I were to buy the own... Because by the time the article came out, I'm like, I think Blade of Selves is really good at $1. And everyone in the comments was like, it's 12. What are you talking about? $1. I was like, oh, it was $1 2 days ago. So sorry about your publication window.
One of the listeners... Oh, I'll let Phil tell this. I presume you're going to talk about your sojourn to the east.
No. You go.
Say one of our hosts, Jason, bought... at $1, as many Japanese copies of Blade of Selves that he could get his grubby bearded mitts on.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that last time I was on the cast, and that's probably a goodbye. Star City just guesses, man. They clearly just guess. And sometimes the market says, hey, you know what? I think that Painseer should be $12. And then Star City says, are you sure? Really, you guys think it'll be $18 for Thing in the Ice? All right. We would be irresponsible not to raise our price when the card sells out. So that's kind of what happened. They're sort of like, I don't know, Because what was the equipment in the set before? The equipment that like copied an equipment for one mana?
Masterwork of Ingenuity.
Yeah, Masterwork of Ingenuity. That was like a buck, so Starseed was like, I don't know, Blade of Selves. If they had anybody on their staff, like, I feel like if they'd asked Benny Smith if that should be a dollar, he'd be like, I don't like the price, but...
If they'd asked me, I would have said, that's going to be a real card in EDH, and it's printed in a terrible deck, so it's going to be less of them than you think.
Yeah, because who wants to buy that deck?
I played against it last night. It's a powerhouse straight out of the box against the others.
If you throw a Sunforger on him, he can end the game pretty fast.
Yeah.
Or basically anything. Like a Quietus Spike on him is pretty brutal. So I don't know. Maybe I don't know. Boros is boring though. So I really want to make a fun Boros deck, and everything I look at is just sort of because how good is I'm terrible with card names. The the enchantment where you get a token on every turn, then you make that many 1/1 soldiers.
Assemble the Legion.
Yeah, see, I'm the worst with card. Because how much fun is that card? I was playing that in Standard. Like, and how good is that in EDH?
You hadn't even finished the description, and Nate knew it.
If you have Jor Kadeen as your general, that can get out of hand really fast. So there's fun stuff to do in Boros, but when you realize that every deck is a variation on the exact same thing, which is like putting equipment on your commander and try to kill him real fast, it gets kind of boring. But a Sunforger toolbox makes it a little less boring, but it's still sort of like, all right, I'm going to go play, you know, Stoneforge Mystic or Stonehewer Giant or something like that to go get Sunforger and then tutor for... You know, I wish Boros could be a little bit more dynamic and have different things it could do, and they really had a shot with Commander 2015 to make Boros a little bit more interesting. And they're like, but we're scared. We're not going to do that. So they didn't.
Yeah, I kind of... we had Ethan Fleischer on, who was obviously a designer on that set. I kind of echoed that sentiments of... I thought that was a missed opportunity.
But what do? Do they break the color pie way open? Like, they don't have the latitude. And that's just... That's a function of the design space for those colors. Because every other color combination is like, wow, you have... When you're Golgari, you can do Reanimator, and you can do Dredge, and you can do all this. And then when it's Boros, it's like, sometimes you get extra combat phases, I guess. Like, what do you even do?
I would create a red-white angel dragon or something like that. It's because white and red have the two most popular tribes, yeah? Other than maybe zombies. And I would keep...
And what would that angel dragon do?
Ooh, I don't know. You're asking me on the spot. He would fly, Phil. I'll tell you that.
He would have double flying. He can't be blocked by creatures with flying.
Horsemanship, yeah. He'd just have single flying, but could it be blocked by creatures with reach? Super powerful. I don't know. It would be cool, though. I don't know. I guess we discussed Boros quite a bit on our last episode where we were talking mass land destruction. And I think in EDH, because that is a frowned upon strategy, Boros loses one of its major win conditions in a lot of metas, which is, I play Gisela, I board wipe, good game, guys, GG.
Yeah. I don't like mass land destruction. If it won the game, fine. Like, I'm more mad at an Armageddon than I am at an Insurrection that kills everybody. If someone plays Insurrection, I'm like, great, good game. I'd love to shovel up and play another game. But if someone plays a Wrath of God an Armageddon or like a Wildfire even, I'm just like, great, you just made the game take longer.
Hey, Nate, Phil, Jason just did our entire last episode in like 10 seconds.
If only we had him on then. We could have spared our listeners from an hour and a half of rambling.
I wouldn't put it that way. You could have exposed your listeners to 90 minutes less of value, and who needs that, right? You're doing your listeners rambling a favor by providing them a service of something to put in their ear holes while they're at their terrible job that's boring. So
now, is ear holes a thing that's spreading through, or you're referencing the episode?
It's
spreading throughout
on
the podcast community.
I think it'll catch on.
All right. Yeah.
Ear holes.
And that comes from MTA Cast, right?
I would say they got it from Brainstorm Brewery, but...
Oh!
fight!
I mean, we've only been on 2 years longer than them, but you know what? Yeah, they're the innovators.
Well, they have actual funny people on their show.
Ooh, good one. Got me.
Sick burn.
Unlike the rest of us, I mean.
I believe the phrase, Phil, is directly off. Anyway.
No, I love the interaction, like, when Marcel is trying to corral you guys, like, to get you guys started, and you're like, inevitably, you're always like, I've been f***ing here for 20 minutes.
it's usually more than 20. Oh. There's sometimes where we get a whole after hours just out of the hour of us trying to get started. It's...
Yeah, how long do you guys record? It sounds like you record for like 4 hours.
3 or 4 hours sometimes, and then we use like an hour of it for the episode. It's
oh my word!
It's our hanging out time, though. You know, like, we don't get to see each other. Like, I don't even hang out. Ryan lives literally an hour away from me, and I don't hang out with him anymore. So, like, it's our hangout.
Well, you have
time,
a child
so
now. That's,
yeah. Oh yeah. Everybody but Ryan has a child, and Ryan's dating a really young girl. So.
Ooh.
So maybe all of us have children, I don't know.
Like, probably shouldn't cross state lines young, or...
No, come on. He's got enough friends that would be like, man, I don't know about her.
I always apply the French rule, which is half your age plus 7 is the youngest you should go.
What's the French, half your age plus 7 is the oldest you should go for a mistress?
mistress.
Or the youngest you should go for a wife. Yeah, things are different in France, I think.
Well, you know. Anyway, Eternal Masters on that note.
That maybe got a little too risque, didn't it?
I think we should get Jason on After Dark when we go.
Oh, absolutely. Can you imagine that?
Oh. It would be like my act, but funny.
You know, I really want to see your act.
There's just nothing... There's nothing recorded that I'm proud of. I will get something online someday.
Is it funnier right. or less funny than the MTA cast?
Now you're just trying to...
Anyway,
I don't know what your goal is. Do you want me to say something bad about that podcast? Because I know better than that.
Oh, no, can you imagine a panel where we've got like Jason, MTA cast, Commander's Brew, and then you two guys... on a panel, I would just try to moderate it and just ask questions from the audience or from listeners. But my God, what a funny panel that would be.
I mean, I only live like 3 hours or so away from Andy. Like, we're both comedians. I'd really love to just go to Ontario and hang out with Andy at some point.
So do it.
Yeah, it's just, you got a kid. It's hard, man. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to Canada, you know, for the weekend. So it takes planning.
You just do what Sean and I do, and you just cut them loose, drive, and block them from your mind.
Oh, yeah, when my daughter's old enough to get her own food, like when she's 2 or whatever. You can use the stove, right? Daddy's going to Canada.
Right.
Do we have a main topic?
Eternal Masters.
Why bother with a main topic? Okay, did you guys already talk about my picks while I was gone?
No, we haven't even gotten to
them. Okay, good.
Before you got online.
I'm sorry. This is a really good set, but people aren't going to think so because no one's going to charge MSRP. Everyone's like, hey, how would you like to pay $20 for a booster pack that you could get a void as your rare? So... It's a tough sell, I think, sometimes, but there are so many good cards. As a EDH player and as like a legacy player / financier, there's so much good stuff in this set, and there are so many cards that have never been good foils. Like, some of these cards have been foils, but they are trash FTV or premium series foils. So I think people are underestimating slightly how good it is to finally get a foil Nev's Disc that isn't trash. You know, so there are random cards in this set that, like, Ashnod's Altar has never been foiled before, you know?
That's right.
Foil Baleful Strix. That's what I'm most looking forward to.
Japanese foil Shardless Agent?
Ooh.
How about that? Yeah. There's real actual stuff that'll be real actual money. And it's brought some of these cards to reasonable, too. Like, a foil Dak Faden was, like, hundreds of dollars before, and now I think it'll be reasonable. I like the new art on Maelstrom Wanderer, and I don't have to play with that stupid Commander's Arsenal foil. So I'm actually playing with a Japanese non-foil Maelstrom Wanderer because I think that's better than playing with the Commander's Arsenal foil. That's how much I hate the Commander's Arsenal foils. So now that we have better art, in my opinion, on Maelstrom Wanderer, that we could get foil or even Japanese foil, even stuff that we had before we're getting in a better form. So, and you know what? Like, people trying to build legacy decks aren't going to care about Maelstrom Wanderer or, you know, Future Sight or Karmic Guide. So this is a real chance for EDH players to bust stuff in booster packs, but also the legacy players to sort of trade off the stuff they don't want. Like, oh, great, foiled Jareth Lannan Titan. That's not for me. I was hoping for, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor. So this gives people that are EDH players a chance to bust something really great, like that foil Vamp Tutor, and they can turn that into a pile of EDH stuff. Or it just gives you a chance to get a sneak attack for $15, you know, reasonably. And I think this is going to drive some of the prices down, and they won't recover. Because everyone talks about Tarmogoyf, right? Oh, Tarmogoyf, the price wasn't affected at all. You know, when you print it in Modern Masters and Modern Masters 2, the price recovered immediately. People are buying Tarmogoyfs four at a time, right? So every new deck that used Tarmogoyfs sucks up four copies. You don't need four copies of Natural Order for EDH, you know? You don't need four copies of Argothian Enchantress to build a new EDH deck. So every new EDH deck needs one copy of Necropotence as opposed to four copies of Sneak Attack for a new Legacy deck. So I think some of the cards, like, because no one's playing Natural Order in Legacy anymore, you know? So I think some of those cards, the price will actually not recover. I don't think Argothian Enchantress is going to go back up, even though it's Mythic. You know, I don't think Necropotence is going to go back up, even though it's Mythic. Definitely Balance is trash now, even though it's Mythic. It's a dollar rare forever. So I think some of this stuff is not going to retain its value, and it's going to get more copies into the marketplace, plus it's going to bring the price down. So I think this is actually fantastic, even for some of the stuff printed at Mythic. And some of the stuff printed at Rare, forget about it. This stuff will be cheap forever. You know, there'll be so many copies. This is going to give us foil Malicious Infliction. This is going to give us, you know, more copies of Imperius Perfect and Heritage Druid. Even though they're rare, it'll make that a little bit more reasonable. And stuff like Sinkhole, that was a common, quote-unquote, but, you know, it was like $1 million. From a financial perspective, I think even for the prices it doesn't bring down, it's going to give people a chance to pay MSRP on a booster pack and open a card they really need for reasonable. So I think it's going to give people, if you don't want a Mana Crypt, and not everybody wants a Mana Crypt, all of a sudden you can trade that away to someone who's trying to build Vintage or wants it in their EDH deck. You can just trade it for a stack of stuff. So this set isn't for everybody. Some people feel like this isn't enfranchising players as much as they'd like. But if you just take this set for what it is and for what it's going to do for prices, I think this is going to, anything under $10, I think it's going to smash the price for a long time. And I think it's going to give people the chance to open some of these cards in a booster pack. It's going to give us foils we've never gotten before. Honestly, this is a home run, and people are going to complain because if you put a $100 bill in every booster pack, people would complain about how it was folded.
So you think even with a limited print run, it's going to smash the prices?
Of cheaper stuff. Like, it's not going to do much to the price of Caracas, I don't think. You know, I don't think it's going to do anything to the price of Mana Crypt long term. I think maybe Jace the Mind Sculptor will recover. I think Sneak Attack could potentially recover. But like Argothian Enchantress, I think it's going to make it more affordable forever, probably. You know, there's,
because of the presence of foils.
Yeah, that too. But wasn't there a judge foil of Argothian Enchantress? I don't know.
Enchantress is $12 right about now, and has been actually hovering between 12 and 15 for a little while.
I mean, Enchantress is a deck in Legacy, technically, but I don't think there's enough Legacy demand to do to the price what you know, happened with Tarmogoyf and Modern Masters. I think Argothian Enchantress is just going to be both more accessible and cheaper forever. Because card availability is not just a euphemism. You know, Wizards they don't like to say price, they like to say card availability, because they like to officially remain agnostic to the secondary market. But they know that card availability is a real thing. So while you, even if you don't bring down the price of Force of Will, you're giving some people the chance to bust it in a $12 to $15 booster pack. and you're getting more copies into every LGS so people can trade for them, you know. So what this is going to do is just get more copies of everything out there. And if Force of Will gets soaked up as fast as Tarmogoyf did and the price doesn't really change, you're still building more decks, right? For every four copies of Force of Will that get opened in booster packs, you're building one more Legacy deck. So that's a real effect. You know, that is one deck that can be built without affecting the price of Force of Will at all. So that's a real thing. So as far as this set goes, I think it's going to smash the prices of some EDH staples. I think changing the rarity on some of these cards, I think the stuff that got up rarityed is fine. Mother of Runes, Imperious Perfect, Heritage Druid, whatever. You know, that it's fine to not completely smash those prices, but some of the stuff that got downshifted in rarity, I think is just as useful. You know, I think that's... And the fact that Wall of Omens was like a $10 uncommon, just one more printing, all of a sudden you got more Wall of Omens. And some of the stuff doesn't matter, like Phyrexian Jester was a quarter before, it'll be a quarter now. But
decent EDH card.
Yeah, Phyrexian Jester's nuts, man. I was pairing that with Deadeye Navigator, and people would always ask to read what Phyrexian Jester did, and they're like, how is it that good? Well, it's a 7-mana card, so nobody who played Standard even knew what that did. Yeah. So, there's more Blood Artists in the market now, you know?
Yeah.
There's more copies of whatever, you know, Rancor. That's too expensive for what it is, you know? So, I think the set's fantastic, personally.
I just wish that there was either more of it or people, the traders, not singles traders, but people selling boxes of it were more fair to their customers and weren't charging through the nose for it. And the limited print, the super limited print run, way more than Modern Masters 2 or even Modern Masters 1, it's more limited than, really affects people's behavior in the market. And I don't know, it's unavailability sort of to your common people, your average EDH player. It just feels harsh.
I think I would rather they underprinted because they are officially agnostic to the secondary market, but they know that they absolutely have the power to dilute it to so much that dealers don't feel confident holding on to copies of cards. And when that happens, nobody's conveying cards to players. Because Wizards doesn't have an official marketplace where they're like, get your singles here.
I'm not suggesting they print it to sort of destroy sort of singles.
But I mean, they could always do a second. They did more Modern Masters 2 than Modern Masters 1. They can always print more Eternal Masters 2 than they did Eternal. Once they realize. And honestly, if it's not selling because it's too expensive, the booster packs will eventually be priced to move. So I think all of it's gonna sell eventually. If it sits,
no doubt,
it's too expensive, the price will go down. So still, like, you're gonna get stuff moving down. So and honestly, all the EDH stuff in this set, there's really not that many EDH cards that are mythic. So I think there's just a lot of EDH rares that are gonna get suddenly pretty affordable. Like, people are like, you know what, I'll just play Unmake because Vindicate is dumb. Why would I pay $20 for a Vindicate? But an $8 Vindicate, all of a sudden you're like, you know what, why not? So I think from an EDH perspective, this set's even better than from a Legacy perspective, personally.
So why do you think they restricted the print run so much?
I think they don't want to do another Chronicles. I think they want a lot of Sensei's Divining Tops and not a lot of Mana Crypts. I think this set will do that. That's exactly what they want. They want more Sensei's Divining Tops in players' hands, but not maybe that many Force of Wills and Caracas. So I think they want the Mythics Deer. I think they just want more copies of Mythics, but they don't want the price to go down that much, and I think they want to bring down the price of the Rares. And I think they want to smash the price of the Uncommons. Because anytime you've got a $10 Uncommon, you're like, all right, something's wrong in Magic. When we have a $10 uncommon.
I agree with you 100%.
So I think this is going to put so many uncommons and so many foil copies of those uncommons out there that...
Yeah.
That, honestly, I think they did the right thing. I know some people are going to complain that maybe some of the prices aren't going to change at all, or it's, you know, the MSRP is too high in a pack, or whatever your LGS charges, which is more than MSRP, is way too high in a pack. But take that up with your LGS. Because I know there are plenty of LGSs charging exactly MSRP for these boxes, because they know that the set isn't quite... When they spoiled Force of Will early and Wasteland early, everyone's like, oh, is this set going to be insane? And then they spoiled Mana Crypt a few months later, and everyone's like, oh, this set's just going to be solid value. And then, you know, as you went on, they started to reveal, hey, World Gorge your Dragon's Mythic.
Yeah,
maybe not every LGS wants to charge $100 over MSP per box. Maybe some people are like, yeah, we'll take $250.
When they spoiled balance as a mythic, I was like, oh. Right.
Could white? Is there nothing in white that could be mythic?
Oh god!
And Enlightened Tutor at rare is. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with Enlightened Tutor being many dollars cheaper than Vampiric. You know, but is there nothing Linvala in white? Yeah, Linvala, of course. You know, or Ariana, maybe, I don't know.
Maybe they're considering Caracas to be a white mythic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're saying. That's, and you know what? Honestly, Caracas, that's a card that basically is, it's just getting soaked up three copies at a time for Legacy. Because Caracas is just a great way to deal with... When people would play Show and Tell and put down an Emrakul and I would put down a Knight of the Reliquary, it felt good to have Caracas in your deck. But Caracas would just ruin EDH as a format, because everyone would play white, you know?
Yeah.
If you could just put their general back in the command zone every turn, that's stupid.
Oh, Jesus.
What are your top three favorite cards in terms of playability? Like, what are you most looking forward to open in a pack? Not that you open packs. I don't want to accuse you of selling your hands such.
Well, I put stuff in the show notes, and I've, like, changed my mind over the course of the day. I said earlier that I liked Mana Crypt in the set, and I still feel like that. Almost because I want Mana Crypt to get another look. It just feels like if Mana Crypt's price doesn't go down, you're not really enfranchising that many players. Like, a $25 Mana Crypt makes the rules committee go, all right, we don't probably need Mana Crypt in this format. It's dumb. It puts a player way too far ahead, you know?
Yeah.
They like Sol Ring. Maybe they don't like Mana Crypt. I don't know. But, you know, if it stays within, like, 40% of its current price, you're not going to enfranchise that many players, and it's still going to be like, hey, I spent more money than you on my EDH deck, so I have a Mana Crypt and a Mana Vault and a Sol Ring, and you just have Sol Ring because it was in a pre-con. So I don't know that I am in favor of the rules committee necessarily looking at Mana Crypt and saying, all right, this needs a ban because there are more copies in players' hands. I just think that in general, making stuff that was completely inaccessible before, because I paid $20 for my Mana Crypt back in 2005.
Nice.
You know,
very nice.
And I sold it for like 50. So having it be around that price for a while, even.
And of course, we pulled our prices from mtgprice.com, which you may be familiar with.
Yeah, they let me write for them.
The Mana Crypt is the old version is selling for $200 to $225 right now, and the current TCG pre-order, because MTG Price doesn't have those, is $115 for a Mana Crypt.
And it was 60, and it sold out at 60, 80, 90, and 100.
Yeah.
So, I like Sensei's Top. I don't know that the price is going to go down that much with it being rare, but I would just, I don't know. I like them in the hands of players almost as much as I hate some jackass playing Sensei's Divining Top in a game. Because I feel like people, if they have extra mana, they will spin the top just because they can and not because they should. So it's annoying to play against Sensei's Divining Top, but I think it's annoying to have an uncommon from a relatively recent set be $1 million. So anything to curb that price, I think, is probably fine.
Incidentally, in England, I can pre-order a Mana Crypt for £75.
But what's that in dollars, like 120?
Yeah, it's about the same.
About the same, yeah. But I can get an original book promo for £100.
Yeah. I like Natural Order. Personally, because yeah. I think the price is going to go down even at Mythic. And again, I'm talking about cards that, like, Natural Order and Sensei Divining Top are the two least 75% cards in the set, probably, but... and probably Vampiric Tutor's the third. But, like, honestly, Natural Order is just a card that you're doing big, dumb, green EDH stuff, whatever. You know, here's... I'm going to go get my Progenitus or whatever. You know, or my... anything, you know? So, any big, dumb creature. I think that Natural Order being in the set is fine.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that was a pleasing reprint. Even though I own one and the value crashed immediately, I still think having Natural Order available to more players means more fun for everybody.
And it might never recover, and I think that might be okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what the cards I wrote down, because you guys said you were going to pick around mine, and I'm just, like, changing my mind.
Yeah, you had... Your next one was Argothian Enchantress.
I honestly... A favorite of mine. Yeah, putting that at a rare might not have been that bad, actually. I mean, at Mythic, it's still going to bring the price down, and I think it's going to get people building more Enchantress-y type decks, which is... I've actually, you know, been building my picks of the week and, you know, writing articles and stuff like that around Argothian Enchantress being more of a thing in EDH, just because at, like, $15, it's sort of like, I don't know, do I really need that when you've got Mesa Enchantress and Vendurin Enchantress and there's that one for Mirage. That when an enchantment dies, you draw a card, like, stuff like that. So yeah,
Femirath Enchantress.
Yeah, I think you're right. Wow, how do you know?
Because I've played against a
certain
person.
That was my
person's...
pick of the week, like, 4 days ago, and I already forgot the name of that card. So yeah, Argothian Enchantress, if that's an $8 card forever, great, you know? And if it's not, it's because they're getting snatched up four at a time to go in a Legacy Enchantress deck. Whatever, play a Legacy Enchantress deck. It's fun, you know? You can blow somebody out with Words of Wind, or you can, you know, just... generate a ton of mana. There's all kind of different fun ways to play Enchantress in EDH, so whatever.
Yep.
What was my other pick, do you know?
Dak Faden.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Dak Faden. Good. Because that was, you know, that's a reason to buy Conspiracy Boosters, but honestly, I think having more Dak Fadens floating around, even though, again, it's a Mythic, so it's not going to do too much to the price, just having it accessible, because... I think Dak Faden's it's a fine Legacy card, it's a fine cube card, but I like it in EDH. It's very 75% to gain control of an artifact.
You mean gain control of the target player's Soul Ring, which is normally what he does.
Yeah, I mean, is that the worst, to gain control of...
Oh, no, he's brilliant.
Soul Ring, Wormcoil Engine, or something like Mimic Vat, or, like, there's all kind of fun stuff.
Blightsteel Colossus.
Yeah, right? Get out of here with that. What are you doing playing Blightsteel Colossus? That's mine. So, I like stealing Vatican Shackles with him. So, like, and his, how fun is his ultimate in EDH?
I've never pulled it off, because I always minus him as soon as I drop him.
Yeah,
he dies.
So, yeah.
It's a brutal ultimate, though.
Yeah, it's a...
I ended up getting two Dak Fadens randomly. So I had some spare change in my pocket once in my LGS, bought a random Conspiracy Boost, opened it, pulled a Dak. And then another online store, if you spent over $100, they sent you a free random booster. They sent me a free random Conspiracy Booster, cracked it, Dak Faden.
Boom.
Nice.
Nice.
Yep. Yeah, very nice.
Now, Sean, what are your three favorites?
Okay, so I went for an obvious one for myself first. One of my favorite ever
Vampire
cards printed full star. No, actually.
That's not his number one.
That's not my number one pick. Necropotence. Just because it's such a great black card.
Oh,
in
it's wonderful.
Every format it's in. It's just a powerhouse of all my decks. And most of my decks are black. I own so many copies of this card, it'd be nice to be able to have access to cheaper ones, but the flip side of that is I already own like 10 copies of Potence.
I like how you call it Potence, because you're on a first name basis.
Yeah. Of course we are.
Me and Potence.
It's a card I could recite every version of its rules text to you, I think, through the times, because it's had so many printings. I love the artwork as well. I know it's from the Commander's Arsenal set, or was it a jewel deck? I forget. But it's way better than the weird skull guy with his strange green hand symbol. So he's expelling...
I don't know. Skulls forever, man.
In the old one, he's expelling green. He's saying, away, green, away.
I actually am not a fan of the new art, but, you know.
Oh, whatever. I like it. Is that Liliana who's getting stuff done to her?
No.
It's definitely a lady. If I
see
not,
not every black mage is Liliana, you racist.
No, it's some of them are me.
You chromacist.
So it'd be nice to see potence come down to below, what, it's like £12 for one at the moment.
Wow. Well, MTG price has it for $9 to $12.50.
Yeah, depending on whether you want a black border or not, depends, which obviously you do. My second choice, Jason, is Vampiric Tutor, because I'm one of them boring magic players that likes to access his deck when he shouldn't be able to.
Well, tutoring is very 75%.
Oh, yeah. Vampiric Tutor, I love playing a 98 card deck. That's so much fun.
Okay. Take the Soul Rings out of your deck and all the other... You play green, don't you? Take Cultivate and Kadama's Reach and Sakura Tribe Elder out of all your green decks, and then we can start having this conversation, shall
play
we?
Vampiric Tutor and go get a basic forest, and then you can compare it to Cultivate.
Exactly.
Two basic lands of my choice.
You know what? Honestly... If you want to play Vampiric Tutor and go get two basic lands, I will allow it.
I've tutored for lands with it before. Not basic ones, but I have tutored for lands with it before.
If you want to plow right. into yourself, be my guest. I'll even let you not take two damage.
Oh, that sounds like a deal. Everyone heard that. If I ever play Jason, my Vampiric Tutor is if I'm going for land. Doesn't deal me damage.
Two basic lands, Sean.
Okay, that's fine. I'll take that as a deal. First turn, drop one black for that. That would be an awesome card.
Yeah, but being able to tutor for your win con, that is the ultimate 75% strategy, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially if you always get Laboratory Maniac.
And that is exactly the same as tutoring for a forest and an island.
Being able to exactly
heavily ramp, being able to heavily ramp in a format that discourages land destruction is abusing another. When I discussed this on Commander's Bureau, I did acknowledge Black Tutor plays against the spirit of the format, the Highlander spirit of the format, but I think because of the agreement amongst many, many, I'd say majority of metas, that land destruction, especially mass land destruction, is frowned upon. Heavily ramping is playing against the nature of the format in the same way people get angry about tutors.
I have to say, I found that when on that episode, your appearance there, I found that very contradictory, because you are the poster child, the representative of anti-land destruction, and yet then you decry that. Oh, if only we were allowed to destroy land, then the green ramp would have no advantage.
No, I didn't at all. I didn't say if only we could destroy land. What I said was,
I'm being pretentious and British.
You're being a
Well, that's the same thing.
That's the same thing, exactly.
Yes.
We don't have Sylvan Primordial. You get to keep your Sepulchral Primordial.
Sepulchral Primordial is a card that goes under the radar a lot of the time. It's a yeah, solid card. I'm not going into the green sinkhole, however, but I just think that there's certain social aspects to EDH specifically that green gets an easy ride on, whereas as a black player we get ridden hard. In fact, in that episode, Jason, I cited your knee-jerk reaction to my joke about Black Tutor in that episode, although I didn't say to Andy directly off, I self-censored.
That's too bad.
There's the reaction to black using that sort of ability that plays against the nature of the format, but green, oh yeah, that's fine.
But you can't say, oh, you guys get to tutor for land, and so I get to tutor for whatever I want.
It's not about tutoring. It's about ramping. Tutoring.
If your win condition is a basic island, then yeah, that's probably an equivalent argument otherwise.
No, but if your win condition is I vastly outnumber everyone on land and have easy access to it that no one can play against. Like, if your win condition is I'm going to create a whole bunch of creatures really fast, there's plenty of perfectly acceptable ways to wipe that in multiple colors. Yeah, blue can do it, black can do it very well, white can do it the best. Red can do it with the Blasphemous Act. If someone just says, I'm going to ramp, 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 and I'm vastly out-resourcing the rest of you, and then because they're in green, they can go, well, I'm going to trash all the mana rocks, so I'm doubly faster than the rest of you. What's the response to that?
The response is to play some land destruction cards in your deck.
Or yeah, blow up whatever green plays because their hand is down to two cards after they get done ramping. And then you just...
But then it's never green on its own, is it? It's green and blue or green and
black. Well, we don't have our Prophet of Kruphix anymore, do we? So we have to play fair as blue-green players, which I do not like. I don't like having to play fair. Why do I only get to play Magic on my turn? That's BS.
As I was, a part of this is...
We have to make do with Seedborn Muse.
Oh, that's not even close. That's not even half as good. Seedborn Muse is maybe a third as good as Prophet of Kruphix.
Yep.
But a part of this is in response to people saying, hey, Black Tutor is really like bad, meh, meh, meh. And I'm not referencing the 75% rule. I agree, in 75% you can tutor in black, but you should be using Diabolic Tutor and crap like that. But, you know, some of it's too efficient.
Beseech the Queen all you want.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but if you cast a Demonic Tutor here, everyone goes, I'm like, quite frankly, bleep right off. Like, you've sat there, you've recurred that Sakura Tribe Elder 10 frickin' times, and the Cultivate, sod off. Like, honestly, go away. I can't be bothered with you.
I don't think playing Cultivate makes your gameplay as linear as saying, hey, this is two copies of my win condition.
I'm not arguing.
If you're using Vampiric Tutor as a toolbox, super.
I don't think that happens.
I feel like everybody's like, oh, I'm just going to go get the... my, like, even Tooth and Nail, I feel like it's boring.
Sure.
It does.
And Tooth and Nail could be the best toolbox card ever, but as soon as you're like, oh, I have Kiki Jiki and Zealous Conscripts in the deck, am I really going to go get an Acidic Slime? Of course not. I'm going to try to win the game here. So, I think linearity is the enemy when I build 75%. I don't like linearity. So if you're tempted to always go get the same card, maybe look at what you're doing with your tutors and maybe consider it. But if you're playing something like Yeast and the Wanderer Bard or, you know, Birthing Pod or something like that, and it's an actual toolbox, then hey, that's interesting. You're like, well, I need to get myself out of this jam. Great. But if you're always getting the same card, then it bores me, and I don't like playing with a deck personally.
Okay, but my argument isn't about linearity. My argument is about that in EDH specifically, there are a certain set of generally accepted social contracts that everyone enters into, and the, like, no heavy tutor, no taking infinite, or like taking infinite turns is generally frowned upon, or mass land destruction is generally frowned upon. I just think green gets a very easy ride on something it does very well, that the social contract, it plays against that social contract. It's not about linearity. It's not about saying, I mean, I had an argument with one person on Twitter that basically said, dies to removal solves this argument. It's like, but it doesn't. That's exactly my point, is that there isn't a fair way of cutting back someone that's ramping via putting lands into play. There is against people that are heavy rocks, and green just gets an easy ride. It's perfectly acceptable. And there's a reason that so many decks are, well, I'm going to pick this commander. He's extra powerful because he's got green in him as well, which just fixes all my ramp problems. You don't have to think about it. For every Sol Ring, every green deck runs Sakura Tribe Elder, Cultivate, Kadama's Reach, often Yavimaya Elder, often Sky Shroud Claim. Yeah, there's a bunch of others. And I don't know. I'd love to see a green deck that doesn't run them. And before you say, I run many black decks that don't run Demonic Tutors or any tutors for that matter. And
you do?
Yeah, loads of them.
Yeah, I mean, we're necropotents instead, so you draw 31 cards. Who did tutor? I got it in the third of the deck I just drew.
And lose 31 life. And lose 31 life.
In all fairness, sometimes he'll tutor for the necropotents.
Do you know what I normally tutor for? I normally tutor for the either the Cabal Coffers or the Urborg 2 with Yawgmoth because I can't catch up with the green players. I normally can't keep up with the land route because I don't play green in many of my decks and everyone else in my play group plays green in almost everything. I can't keep up with everyone, so I normally tutor for one of those two cards.
I will say that the Aloro is the number one most built ever deck on EDH Rec.
Say again, sorry. Aloro, right. But Aloro. That's because I think that's a skewed sample. I would look to just below him. I think Aloro is...
That's not a skewed sample.
If you're a new... No, because EDH Rec looks at new decks being put online.
No, it doesn't.
But that's all time. I'm not talking this month or this week. That's all time.
Aloro, as well, he's in a pre-con, a very popular pre-con. He's in blue and black, which are very popular colors. And life gain is a very appealing starter EDH strategy, isn't it?
But it has nothing to do with green, and yet green is easy mode?
Yeah. I think you're arguing two different points.
Yeah.
Popularity,
if you argue two different points, then it's way easier to win the argument. I don't... It's a legit strategy.
Yeah.
So on EDH Rec right now, Aloro is number one all time, number two this month, and number two this week.
Which is insane. Why are people building Aloro lately?
And it's not a great deck, is it? What card's been printed that really pays into life gain recently? I'm trying to think.
Well,
no, Ailey.
Well, Ailey, and then the guys from Commander 2015, I guess.
Karlov.
Karlov.
Yep. What's in?
We got cheap Felidar Sovereign.
Alhamaret's Archive, I guess.
I don't know. I would think that the Gitrog monster would be the number one this month, but I don't know. That's green.
I think Merin's just been... She's already the most popular Golgari commander, isn't she? She must be up there. She must be flying up there.
Merin is number one this month and this week. Gitrog monster is number nine this month and number eight this week.
I think Merin's very similar to, and nothing to do with its color, but Merin's very similar in popularity to Aloro. If you're new to EDH or you want to build one EDH deck because you play other formats primarily, but a load of you guys want to play EDH, they're very easy to build into strategies that don't actually require many expensive cards to buy.
Oh, Prosh too.
Which two, I'm sorry?
You could put $5 worth of cards in your Prosh deck and have it be like pretty good. You could put $30 worth of cards in the Prosh deck and have it be insane.
Yep. Buy a Purphoros, crack it in there, it's pretty much done.
Yeah, a Purphoros and a food chain, and you're done.
But it is interesting to note that the actual data we have does not support your argument, Sean.
What's my argument, Phil? I wasn't ever discussing popularity of cuts.
But you're talking about how green makes it easier, and if green made it easier...
Everybody would do it.
Right. And that's the point. Aloro, all time. No green to be found.
Let me just log on to EDH Rec.
Got lots of tutors, though.
I'm not
got lots of tutors and card draw on board wipes.
Yeah.
What do you think makes black so popular?
All time. So let's look. Black. Black's popular because it does everything really well.
Oh.
With the exception
except
of removing...
mana ramp.
What? But I'm not
and
in denial.
And blowing up artifacts.
Yeah. It has inexpensive land removal.
And enchantments. Not very good
so
at enchantments.
So it can keep up. It has inexpensive creature removal. So all those creatures that the green ramp player drops can just be, you know, removed.
I think black
at instant
is
speed
it's
for two
are
mana.
Are you comparing the spot removal of creatures is as powerful as mana ramping? Are you actually
it's the answer to mana ramping.
Is it hell? Well, okay, so you mana ramp...
It's the answer to mana
ramp. You mana ramp into a Cyclonic Rift. How's my, an early board, just to keep the board in your favor, and get everyone else's mana ramp?
So
you're suggesting...
Wait, you're citing a blue card now.
Oh, God's sake. If you even listened to the Commander's Brew episode, which I'm starting to think you didn't, Phil...
No, we did.
I specifically said this does not apply to mono green. It only becomes a problem when you
couple
green.
We were talking about
up.
Eternal Masters.
Sure, I've got to go in 5 minutes anyway.
A lifetime ago, I feel like we were talking about Eternal Masters.
So your
Sean
third
said,
card,
you know
Sean
what would be
is...
fun? To have an argument we already had on a previous episode.
Yeah, I wasn't on this show.
As if the arguments had changed. Maybe this time I'll make the case about black tutoring being okay.
No, I openly admit it's abusive. What my point is that black tutoring gets a hard ride where for playing into its color, part of the color square, whereas green doesn't. It's not about popularity or anything like that. And then people complain about ubiquity of certain cards, but they don't complain about ubiquity of certain cards in certain colors.
And yet the easy road that green has does not result in it being the most popular color on EDH Rec.
It utterly irrelevant. It also doesn't result in it being the most popular pudding available in your supermarket, but I'm not arguing that point, so it's effing irrelevant.
Oh, but it's very relevant.
How?
I don't think green gets an easy ride.
Mono green certainly doesn't. I would agree with that.
We're just we're talking about green privilege and...
So your third card, Sean.
My third card is a card I'm just happy to see reprinted because it seems too expensive for what it is, but very good for EDH, which is Duplicant.
Absolutely.
Duplicant's a great card, goes in a ton of EDH decks because it's colorless. It's a great way of you being able to exile a creature without being in white or white and black or Orzhov or just white. It's just fantastic.
I love ramping into Duplicant with my green decks.
Do I love tutoring for it with my black deck.
What would you do with your ramp with your green deck, Phil, if I took your green deck and stuck it up your rectum? You wouldn't do it very often, though, Phil, because green's such an unpopular color, isn't it? I mean, it's not in Aloro or Nekusar, is it?
That's right. Which no, it's not.
I bet Duplicant's in Aloro, though.
Yeah, I bet it is, because you can tutor that up.
I'm just looking on. I'm just looking for the top 10 creatures in Aloro here, according to your fecking Bible, EDH Rec, which is the only source of information you have. And oh no, it's not. Oh. Duplicant's not on there. That's weird, isn't it? Very strange.
I love how you decry the presence of actual data.
But you're arguing data about popularity, and that is not my point.
No, it's not popularity. What is popularity except building decks anyway, right? People are building decks. They upload them.
Okay.
What are they building? Are they building decks? They just want to, oh, let's stock this up. Let's drive the Aloro numbers up today.
Pick a green commander, any green commander.
How about we go back to Eternal Masters and make this another argument?
I'm going in a minute. I just want to finish off. Pick any green commander.
Seton.
I don't even know that one. How do I spell that?
S-E-T-O-N.
S-E-T-O-N. Right. I'm going to look up this guy. That,
Jason, you pulled that right out of your ass. That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's where my green deck was.
No,
I stuffed it on my rectum per his request.
I know, I was specifically directed at Phil.
My God, I love being able to get all of us together and just have this argument, because this is awesome. I'm loving it. It may not make the best radio, but at this point.
Who cares?
Oh, look at that. Seton. Top card, Skyshire Acclaim, Cultivate Kadama's Reach. Okay, next green commander. And I'm going to try and find commander where those three are not in the...
Here's one, Sidisi. Trying to find a black deck that doesn't have Sidisi, Runescarred Demon, Demonic Tutor, Diabolic Tutor.
Ooh.
Go ahead.
Got him.
Go ahead. You want to find a black deck that doesn't have those three cards. And you want which Sidisi? I'll let you choose.
But we don't have enough time to find a black deck that doesn't have those three cards.
But it's not a popularity contest, though, is it, Phil? Unless you're talking to you.
Well, no, that's the point. You'll find those three cards in every black deck.
No, you won't. All right.
Nate, what's your number one card?
Well, I have to go, so I'm going to say goodbye before Nate goes into his list. So, two final points. One... Duplicant is an excellent card that deserves its reprint and doesn't deserve its current $8 price tag.
And you like this art better than the one where the guy's kind of sneaking up behind him?
where the guy is getting... Oh, I don't know. I'm scared to guess what's going on below the frame of the picture.
Oh, he's getting stabbed in the kidneys.
Hey, does
no
this
doubt.
Rag smell like chloroform?
Yeah, I kind of prefer the new art. It's from Commander's Arsenal originally, that art, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like them both. It's a fine card. And the second point is, before I start getting more angry tweets from green players who are trying to...
From me?
Oh, you...
I'm tweeting at you right now.
I believe you are.
Yeah. Hey, let's all angry tweet, right, Sean, right now.
Before you send me angry tweets, it's just an opinion. And do you know what? If you want to... I will never tell you to stop putting any card in your deck. At all, go for it. Unless it's Karametra as your commander and you're going to stack endless card draw triggers on the stack and resolve them all at what I can only describe as a geriatric pace.
Oh,
I will
my
stop
word.
You doing that.
It is terrible. It is genuinely terrible.
And on that note, gentlemen, I have to go and look after an angry 2-year-old. And
is there any other kind of 2-year-old?
You occasionally get sleeping 2-year-old if you're lucky. And
if you employ a duplicate to help you out, I guess.
Jason, it's been a pleasure. And I'm going to put Vampiric Tutors that I'm going to pull out of my Eternal Masters booster packs into all my 75% decks.
Good, you can make them an 80% deck and then you can pretend that's a thing.
Ooh, only 5% for Vampiric Tutor. I think it's worth. I think it's worth at least 15%. It's been a pleasure, Jason.
See you, Sean. This has been great.
Nate, it's been a pleasure.
All right,
go yourself, Phil.
Correctly off.
Indeed, indeed.
Bar. Did you have to tutor that one up?
If I did, I wouldn't have the mana to cast it because I don't play hashtag easy mode.
It's not even the most popular insult.
Blessed be Phyrexia. Bye!
Oh, Mandarin.
Yeah!